Hi everybody, my name's Mickey Bush and I'm a fully conceited addict.
Hi Mickey.
And glad to be here. I'm somewhat thrilled to be here. You know, I'm enjoying this meeting immensely. You know, I love it. It's a fabulous meeting. Me and Gary were talking earlier and it's a fabulous meeting. It's as good as any meeting I've ever been to in my entire life. Right here, right now. And glad that it's successful and that the trusted servants that are putting it together and keeping it going, you know, are still here, actively involved. And as a result, we're here to be available to the addict who still suffers. And I was just talking to my man here earlier. Who is the addict who still suffers? Who is the addict who still suffers? Who is the suffering addict? Ask yourself that. Maybe you want to share with us when it comes to, you know, the sharing part of the meeting. Who is the addict who still suffers? Ask yourself that question. If we're going to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, who's the newcomers? Are there any newcomers in the room? Are there any? I was sweet washing up my mess here when the newcomers were. Are there any newcomers in the room? No. No new people here. One over there. Two. Good. Any others? Three. Four. Good. I want to tell you, you're very welcome. Like to welcome the new folk. You know. You're not the most important person in the room. You know, you'll be told that shit, but you ain't the most important person in any room I'm in, you know, and I'll tell you that. But we love you and we want you to keep coming back. Actually, when we were putting the text together, when we were first putting the text together and we were filling in the formats and the requests for information and stuff like that that was eventually to form the text, you know, there was two things that I voted against putting that later went in the text. And that was referring to the newcomer as the most important person in the room. I voted against that. I absolutely know that there's nobody more important than anybody else in Narcotics Anonymous. And if the newcomer's the most important person in the room, if I can refer to a newcomer as being the most important person in the room, I'm a goddamn pubic hair away from referring to her as the most important, or him, or them, or those, or they, or me. I can make anybody more important. So I don't go along with that the newcomer's the most, because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. That's a very selfish motive. That's selfish, if you think about it. You're only important for my sake. I don't go along with that. But I love you, and I want you to stay and be a part of this thing as you loved me and told me to keep coming back. You know? So I voted against that. And I also voted against referring to alcohol as being different. You know, the mere fact that we mention it makes it different. And we have to be absolutely aware that alcohol's a drug. And I always drank the drug alcohol. But I never ever, you know, set out from my house and said to myself, oh, I'm going to go down the pub and drink some of the drug alcohol tonight. You know, I never said that, you know, but, you know, that's what kind of flowed and what have you. So those are a couple of things that I voted against when the format of the text was being put together. And anybody read the text, by the way? Anybody read the text? Who reads the text? Yeah? Good. Good. A few hands, a few shirts. Good. It's very important. I don't like... I don't like going to NA meetings and not hearing the text mentioned. And unfortunately, so many meetings, nobody seems to mention the text. Nobody seems to talk about the text and the program of where our recovery comes from. So I always do. I always make it a point. I have a Tuesday home group in Santa Monica, in Los Angeles, California, where I live. And we always make sure that we talk about the text. We always at least mention it so that the newcomer knows where we're coming from on that. How about old farts in NA? Are there, how many folk here are over 20 years clean? Gets lonely, don't it? Yeah. Got no one to play with. You know. I'll be clean 23 years on Monday, this coming Monday. And if you don't think that's a big deal, try getting it. You know, that is like, time don't matter, time don't count, all we got is today, one day at a time, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, time counts to me. T-I-M-E, this I must earn. You know, it takes a lot of balls around here to get time and to stick around it in spite of everything. In my experience, people who say time don't count either ain't got any or ain't done any. You know, every time I got sentenced and got time, it fucking mattered, believe me, you know. And so it matters today in this life too. And you know, it sure does matter in terms of recovery, you know, having a disease of addiction, you know. ADDICTION. You know, anybody doing drugs in compulsive trouble is our newcomer. That's what addiction means to me, because I'm a real addict. Anybody doing drugs in compulsive trouble, you know. And I've been clean a long time now, and I like being clean. I live a clean life. I live this life of recovery clean, C-L-E-A-N, completely leaving every addiction now. Now's the time. N-O-W. Why? Because there's no other way. That's where we have to live. We have to live in the now because we're new. N-E-W. Nothing else worked. You know, if anything else had worked, we wouldn't be wasting our time in here, would we? Who would? Who would come in here, you know, if they weren't at the end of the road or at the end of their tether? You know, we don't sort of give up and surrender while we've got any options, do we? And I didn't know any of this. I got to recovery. The first meeting that I went to was an AA meeting on January the 15th, 1983. Prior to that, I'd been going to adult children of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And prior to that, and along the way, I'd been going to a newly forming fellowship then called Codependence Anonymous. And the reason I went there was because I was broke, busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted. And, you know, I'd got this kind of like fill-in job. And one of the dudes who worked at the place, he, on a Tuesday night, would give me a ride to Westwood. And because he went to one of these meetings, and I could get a ride, and it was almost home. So on that particular night, he'd give me a ride, and one day he said, "Why don't you come in the meeting with me?" And I went, "Well, I don't really know what that's all about." But I went in, and wow, it was ding, 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 all this stuff that I could relate to, you know. Totally sick. I was really, really sick as well. I mean, I was toxic and hurting. And I didn't know anything about what was wrong with me. I didn't really know there was anything wrong with me. I never had any awareness of anything that was wrong. I never knew about addiction. I never knew about a disease. I never knew about a fellowship. I had no idea. No idea whatsoever. I had no idea that all the trouble I'd ever been in my entire life, drugs was in there somewhere. Every bit of trouble I'd ever been in my entire life, drugs was in there somewhere. D-R-U-G-S, devil's revenge upon God's subjects. You know, drugs was in there somewhere on every bit of trouble. You know, even when I got my first adult prison sentence, you know, I'd been in trouble all my life, and I had a jacket and I had a, you know, record. And every time I ever got put away, or they always put me on the psych ward and the nut ward and what I called the IST list. You know, the trick cyclist, the psychologist, the pathologist, all the, you know, and I was on all the lists, and they would talk to me about my mum, and, you know, and I'd talk to them about their mum, you know, and I knew how to work that ticket, because when you go to these joints, Grendon Underwood or any of those kind of joints, you got to work your ticket so that you can get what you want, but you don't end up in the wrong wing, you know. And so I knew how to deal with the IST list. And so when I got this 18 months, I got 18 months, my buddy got 2 years, and he went to the Ville, because I was a star prisoner, it was first adult sentence, and I went to the Scrubs. They put me on the IST list. They put me down psychiatrist. I had a, like, you know, was known as a nutter, an idiot, And the guy, you work your ticket, and the guy eventually, he got pissed off at me after I'd played him for a long time. And he went, "Fuck off, you," he said. "You got a booze problem is what your problem is." I went, "Oh, don't put that down there. What are you doing putting that down there? Don't put that down there. Don't write that on my list." He went, "That's what your problem is." I went, "I ain't got a booze problem. What the hell's wrong with you?" You know, he said, "Well, what do you think you're doing in here?" I said, "A year and a half." He said, "Yeah, what did you get it for?" I said, "Robbery, armed robbery, armed robbery with violence. Put it down, put down there, thief." He said, "Yeah, what did you steal?" I went, "Oh, that's just coincidence, you know." Me and Mickey had gotten busted for hijacking a truckload of booze, you know, and that's where I got down. So drugs was in there, every bit of trouble I'd ever been in my entire life. And it never, ever dawned on me that that was the cause in what was going on. And even when it did have some kind of indication that things weren't right, it never once even came close for me to consider that quitting would be a solution. That never even came close, never even thought about that. And, you know, I do drugs. That's what I do. I always drank the drug alcohol, always. Never, ever remember not drinking the drug alcohol. And everybody I knew drank the drug alcohol. I don't know anybody who didn't drink. Yeah? Everybody drank. Never had a reason to. I don't remember anybody having a reason to drink. I don't remember anybody having a reason not to drink. Everybody just drank. We drank if the team won. We drank if the team lost. If it was a tie, we drank till there was a result. We just drank. Everybody drank, you know, and I don't know why. I never ever asked why. Nobody ever even considered why. And of course, I was somewhat different. All the other troops, they didn't do drugs like I did, but I did. I went on and did drugs, and it used to scare some of the folks that I used to run with. You know, some of these folks were like everyday geezers, but they were like dangerous. You know, and we would sit around and we would plan robberies and stuff, and I'd be smoking a doobie maybe, or whatever. I used to do a lot of speed then as well, and I remember one criminal sitting next to him. We were planning this robbery, and I said, "Here, Rob, take a hit on this." And he went, "Get away, you! You're a goddamn hophead, you are. You're on them goofers." You know, when they try and guess the drug, you know what I mean? "Get away with me. Never mind the fucking gallon of gin he's drinking, you know what I mean?" But the thought of taking a toke on a doobie was like, you know, beyond what he's capable of. He just didn't understand, but I did, and I loved it, and that was what I did. And I went all the way. I never knew that I would progress into all kinds of other things. I never knew what was the essence of why I was doing it either. I never had a clue. Not until I got here. Not until I got the recovery. And I tell you that on Monday I'll be 23 years clean, because that'll be the day that I celebrate my clean time, because that's the day that May 7th was the last drugs of any kind that I did, cocaine. And I always remember it, as a matter of fact, but I didn't remember it. And I'd been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 4 months, and I hadn't drank for 4 months in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought I was okay. I thought I was doing better. I didn't know anything different. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and alcohol and alcoholics and alcoholics and Alcoholics Anonymous don't drink, so I never drank. But I always drank, but I never only drank. I also do lots of other shit. You know, good shit. And I am bad shit. I do the bad shit too. I don't care what it is. And I never even heard the term drug of choice till I came here. I mean, who ever heard the term drug of choice? I mean, I can't even imagine that. I can't imagine being backstage at a Rolling Stones concert or something and somebody coming up to me and saying, "Hey, dude, what's your drug of choice?" You know? "Mick, bring a rig, got some good shit, let's go backstage." And certainly not my drug of choice is Jack Daniels. It never fucking happened. I heard drug of choice? What the fuck's that? What is a drug of choice? You got to choose? Or you get to choose? What the fuck's a drug of choice? I have no idea what a drug of choice is. None whatsoever. You know, my drug of choice, if I got one, is yours. You know, whatever you got is my drug of choice. And anything you got is my favourite. You know, and that's usually followed by, is it good and will you front me some? You know? I don't know from nothing else. You know, I always want something. I'm always doing something. On my last day of before hitting bottom, I come off a run. I was on a 3-day run, and I come off this run, and I'm on the phone to the man, trying to get something for nothing is what I'm trying to do. And I'm out in the street, and I look down, and in the dirt is a pill. In the dirt is this pill, and I went, oh my fuck, look at that. Swooped on the pill, picked it up and ate it, like looked around for another one. You know, and I have no idea what it was. It was a pill. You know, it could have been a bloody dog worming pill for all I know. It was a pill. It might have done something. I don't know what it is. I don't care what it is. I just want something because I can't stand reality. I can't stand what I'm doing, and I can't stand who I am, and I can't stand, you know, the consequences of what I have. I have to have something to buffer me from reality. I can't stand. Now, I don't know this. I don't consciously know what's going on at the time. You guys all seem to know that. I didn't know that. When I come in here and you guys are telling me why you use, you know, and you're using because I can't stand the pain, and I'm using because I'm covering up who I am, and I'm using because I've got all these issues, you know, like pass the tissues, I got issues, you know. The fuck do you get that from? Where'd you learn that? You know, I can't even imagine that. I have no idea. I cannot imagine, you know, anything or anybody. I certainly can't imagine going into a pub, for example, and saying, oh, bartender, hit me with a triple shot of your best booze, because I can't stand who I am and I want to cover up the pain tonight, you know. I have no idea about that. Oh, Mr. Dealer Man, give me an extra rock of crack cocaine because I really feel inadequate. I mean, you guys all seem to know that. I have no idea about none of this. I have no idea. I'm so sick that I don't know I'm sick. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be so sick that you don't know you're sick? That's really sick. And if you're as sick as I was when I got here, so sick that you come in a room full of addicts like this, good addicts seems to me, and you scan the room, because where I came from, you had to be a great scanner. You had to be able to go into any room and had to be able to scan the room for the old bill or the next victim, you know, whatever you were doing, and you had to be able, and so you become a great scanner. You're an addict to come into recovery, and you have to learn how to scan the room. And you scan the room, you're so sick, you think, well, I ain't as sick as him. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be in a room full of addicts thinking you ain't as sick as the next guy? That's really sick. So if you're in here tonight wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real addict or not, I want you to know that I can relate to being as sick as you don't think you are. You know, really sick, and I never knew. I never knew. You knew. I never knew. I do today, of course, more has been revealed, and I've kept coming back since then. And today I do know the nature of the beast, and I do know what to do. You know, I'm Mickey Bush, I'm an addict, I'm in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I know what's wrong with me, and I know what to do about it. That's a lot of shit right there. And I never brought that in here with me. Our first speaker, that I thank you so much for that rendering, it was very enlightening to me, reminded me several things. Hitting bottom was one of them. I had no idea what hitting bottom was. Heard it mentioned, I figured I knew, I guessed it and thought that I knew, but I didn't know. See? And what was different about January the 15th, 1983, was on January the 15th, 1983, I hit bottom. Didn't know it at the time. I didn't know what was wrong with me, and I didn't know what, wasn't a consciousness about what was happening. But in retrospect, when I look back, and that's why we say keep coming back and stick around, more will be revealed. If it's, you know, unknowing, or you don't understand very much, or what we're talking about doesn't really collate to you, that's why. Keep coming back. More will be revealed, and you will start understanding and grasping this if you stick with us. Not if you drift off and think that you know better than we do. Stick with us. Stick around here, and more of this will become knowledgeable to you as the way of life, the wonderful way of life, the steps, You know, in the beginning we learn how to do them, and we do them one after the other, and we apply the steps, to our daily affairs. But as you stick around here, and this is no longer a theory, it's a way of life, and you start living this way of life, and you start living these steps and these principles in all our affairs. And we start like becoming a different person, a changed person, because that's what's going to enable us to come here and stay here. The change. In and of the steps ain't going to do it. What the application of the steps create a change, and the change will do it. The step itself won't. You know, and just coming to meetings won't. Sitting your ass in a seat, you know, ain't gonna do jack shit for you. If you don't, if you see, addicts come to NA and they think they can stick their arse in a seat and it's going to come up through the hole in their butt through osmosis, you know, and it doesn't work that way, you know. But we think that stuff, and I didn't know either. And on January the 15th, 1983, I hit bottom. I didn't know I hit bottom, but later on I found out. And I found out here. I didn't work it out for myself. How could I work it out for myself? I'm powerless. How can I work something out when I'm powerless? When I've got no power to work it out? We say things like it's a self-diagnosed disease. I don't know where that shit came from, but how can I self-diagnose a disease that I'm powerless over and tells me I ain't got it? I can't do that. You know, you got to help me do that. That's why we have this power here. Me plus you is a power greater than me. You plus us is a power greater than you. Together we can do what I couldn't do alone. I couldn't stay clean, you couldn't stay clean, but together we can stay clean. Here's a power right here, right now. Don't you think that there's a power in this room right here, right now? When I don't know how many addicts are in the room here, seems like there might be 100 addicts here tonight. Don't you think that there's a power right here, right now, enabling 100 addicts to be clean here in, where are we, the West End? Where is this place? West End. Yeah. There. Don't you think there must be a power in this room enabling 100 addicts or thereabouts to be clean right here, right now in Trafalgar Square? There must be, mustn't there? Because if there ain't a power right here, right now, in this very room, enabling upwards of 100 addicts to be clean in Trafalgar Square, and we really do suffer from a disease that we're powerless over, when we leave here, we'll have to go and get loaded. If we don't have a power to counteract the power of the disease that I'm powerless over, when I leave here, that disease that I'm powerless over is going to make me do something that I don't want to do. Because that's what the disease does. That I can't stay clean just because I want to. I can't stay clean just because I've decided to just say no. You know, I don't even know where that shit comes from. Some of the lip-flapping party line bullshit that you hear around the rooms of NA, I have no idea where it comes from. I'm a real addict. I will use no matter what. Not I won't. You know, we tell new folk, you know, just go to meetings and don't use no matter what. If I could do that, I wouldn't need to go to fucking meetings. You know? But it's very dangerous because we tell the new guy to, you know, go out there and do something that he can't do, that we're in here telling him to do. So then he thinks that what we got in here don't work for him because he can't do that. See? So we have to be careful along some of these lines. And, you know, on January the 15th, 1983, what was different about that day than any other day that I'd come out of a similar situation, and I'd come out of similar situations to January the 15th. January the 15th wasn't the worst I had ever experienced. You know, I've come out of blackouts, for example, on 5-point restraint, puking straight up in the air in a nut ward for the criminally insane, you know. That wasn't the case on January the 15th, 1983. But you know what? I hit bottom. Most folk don't know what hitting bottom is. They think they do. They believe they do and they say they do. But they actually don't. Because we're not saying, we're not telling, we're not passing on this message. So we have a responsibility to do that. But hitting bottom isn't what I thought it was. I thought hitting bottom was what I heard a lot of other people talking about. I thought hitting bottom was like what I heard in the meetings, people saying everybody's bottom's different. It's different for everybody. Everybody's got a different bottom. Everybody's rock bottom is different. Better not be different. Not if we really know what we're talking about. but most don't. So they flap their lip and repeat what they hear without ever condensing it and understanding it. See, hearing Bonham better not be different for everybody. It wasn't different for me then, but I didn't know anything about it. See, I thought the same as what a lot I spoke to people here tonight. I asked folk here tonight about their Bonham. You'd be amazed what I get told and what you guys tell me. Yeah, but you'd be amazed what I said when I like described my Bonham. I thought Bonham was how much I lost and how far down I went and where I ended up. Broke, busted, disgusted and not to be trusted. Detox, money gone, family gone, like strapped down in on a gurney or something of that nature. But that wasn't hitting Bonham. That was the outside circumstances and conditions my life was in. That wasn't Bonham. That was, you know, the circumstances and condition I found myself in as a result of my addiction. But that wasn't Bonham. Sometimes those outside circumstances and conditions we find our life in enable us to become capable of hitting Bonham, but in and of themselves they are not the Bonham, though we think, believe and say they are. And the danger of thinking, believing and saying that those outside circumstances and conditions of our life is the Bonham is that as that those conditions get better and improve, we falsely believe we've gotten better and improved and fucking use again. Happens every day. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Yeah. See, so we have to be very careful about what we're talking about. I asked one girl, I said, what was your Bonham? She said, I was feet to the curb, hustling the Broadway, prostituting myself, trying to earn a dollar. I said, that wasn't your Bonham. She said, well, I think it was. I said, I don't give a fuck what you think. Yeah. I said to the dude, what was your Bonham, pal? Oh, he said, that's easy. I was locked up in a penitentiary, married to Bubba. I said, that wasn't your Bonham. He said, it felt like it was. Bad minds. They got bad minds, you know. They terrible people. See, those millionaires and celebrities that I sponsor, they have to hit Bonham just as devastatingly as those guys on Skid Row I work with on a daily basis. See, I work with a lot of highfalutin people. There's a difference. I was just called a 12-step celebrity. Did I tell you that? Did I tell you that, Gaz? I was just referred to as a 12-step celebrity. He said, Mick, you're a 12-step celebrity. I said, fucking big deal. A celebrity in an anonymous program. That's fucking good. Yeah, yeah. Fuck you. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know where that little tangent came from, but anyway. But, see, hitting Bonham ain't about the outside circumstances and conditions our life is in. We think it is, but it ain't. Hitting Bonham's an inside job, not an outside circumstance. See, sometimes those outside circumstances enable us to become capable of hitting Bonham, but in and of themselves they are not the Bonham. And that's what happened to me on January the 15th, 1983. January the 15th, 1983, drugs had stopped working for me. What do I mean by that? I hear that a lot, but what do I mean by that? Drugs had stopped working for me. Did that mean I didn't get dope sick? Did that mean that I didn't like get drunk and staggered down? Did that mean that I didn't like get paranoid? What did that mean? No, it didn't mean that. What drugs stopping working for me was drugs had stopped working from the neck up, not the neck down. And what it was about me that made me an addict in the first place that I fully concede to is not what I do because I'm an addict. I hear people and I ask them, what is it about you that makes you an addict? They don't know. They think they do, but they don't know. See, they think that what they do because they're an addict is what makes them an addict. They think that how much they use or where they ended up and all that. No, what makes me an addict is not addictive behavior. See, I can read that in a library book. I can read that I got a twofold disease. I can read that what I do as an addict. But that's not what makes me an addict. What makes me an addict and what differentiates me from the normal people out there, they seem to estimate that 9/10 of the world are not addicts, 1/10 is. I got 3 sisters and a brother. They're not addicts. They don't drink and drug. They don't, you know, if they do, they very minimally. They're not addicts. They don't. Is that the VD clinic? Somebody got the heavy drip. That's the only reason they allow phones and beepers to be left on in the meetings I go to, is if you're expecting a call from the local VD clinic, you know. Because they only call if you've got a positive test, so if your phone goes off, we sympathise, but you ain't getting fucking laid tonight, you know. And, but anyway, so, you know, what made me an addict wasn't what I did because I was an addict. What made me an addict was what separates me from normal people. My three sisters and brother, for example, they don't understand me. I don't understand them. They don't understand why I use. I don't understand why they don't, you know. I asked them, why don't you drink? They say, I don't like it. Don't like the way it makes me feel. I say, what? How does it make you feel? They say, well, if I have one too many, I feel sick. I say, sick? You got to use past that. I mean, who stops at sick? You know what I mean? That's a fucking wimp, isn't it? I mean, but they don't laugh. I mean, it doesn't register with them. They don't understand me, and I don't understand them either. Same as my mum. I mean, she passed this year, but before she passed, I was over here, and, you know, and she didn't know me. My own mum didn't know me as much as you folk who'd never seen me before and might not see me again. You know me. Because I'm an addict, you know me better than my own mum knows me. See? I would go home here to London, England every year, certainly once, maybe twice, sometimes three times. And the first thing I'd do, I'd go around, knock my mum up, and I'd tell her, Mum, I'm 22 years clean. She'd say, so is the cat. I mean, she don't like give me a pat on the back for not doing something that I shouldn't have done anyway. And I drove her nuts my whole life. I mean, we make people suffer in our addiction, you know. My mum, you know, I can remember her, you know, her neighbours talking to her about me and stuff when it was like always in trouble, and her neighbours would say, how's your Mickey, Mary, how's he getting on? And she'd say, oh, he's really doing good. He ain't been locked up for 9 months, you know, and she would think that I was doing good if I just weren't doing bad, you know. Well, that ain't doing good, you know. She died with the contentment of seeing a different side to me. She died with a full knowledge of the results of being an active member, you know. And she loved it. She didn't understand it, but she loved it. She loved what it done for me, and she loved the results of what I do for other people. And she was enormously proud of me, and she was enormously... she lived in my sunlight, and she loved that. And, you know, I live in Los Angeles. I've been there, you know, many years, and I've travelled all over the world carrying this message. I've been on 7 continents carrying the message. And, you know, I send her CDs, and nearly any time that I'm recorded, as most meetings get recorded these days, I would always say to the table, look, here's one, send one to me mum. And she would get these CDs, and she would play them. And you know, she lives up there in Potter's Bar, and... she would have her little community circle and the old Darby and Joan Club and all that, you know, and they would sit around at different people's houses, and they would sit around and they would all, like, sit around drinking tea and telling lies, you know, and, you know, and they do that, don't they? I mean, they're entitled, but, you know, and she would say, you got to send me some more CDs, Mick. All the old girls down the club, they want to know how you're getting on. They was asking me today, how's your Mickey, Mary? How's your Mickey in America, Mary? Tell me how Mickey's doing. I bet you're proud of him, Mary. And, you know, her chest would go out, and she would be proud, and she would tell them what I was doing, because I would tell her, and she would, like, feel, you know, immensely proud. That, if you don't think that gives you a big fat feeling, try it. Try getting clean. Try living this way. Try passing that down. Anybody got kids here? I got 2 kids. Boy and a girl. Never had a wife of my own. My three sisters and my brother, they're not addicts. They got 2 kids apiece. You know. The kids are. They ain't, the kids are. I am, my kids ain't. See what we're dealing with here? See how insidious this thing is? Yeah. There's no right direct pattern. There's no pinpointing of this is right and that's wrong. No, we all got a contribution to make. And what happened on January the 15th, 1983, when I hit bottom, was that in desperation and despair, the addict that I am no longer had a buffer between me and the big, bad world that I hated. I was living in Los Angeles, been there a long time. Yeah. I hurt so bad, I hurt and I hate. And being an addict for years, drugs had changed my perception of reality. That's what makes us addicts, folks. Drugs changes the addict's perception of reality. See, we often don't understand that, but that's what it is that makes us addicts. That's what differentiates us from all the other stuff. All the other stuff that we can read about is true if you're an addict, but the one thing that clinches the deal is that drugs for the addict changes their perception of reality. It takes me out of the reality that I'm in that I can't stand and makes it okay for me to at least exist. Or I call it a nerd remover. Drugs are a nerd remover. They remove the nerdness. I feel like a nerd, I use, and I don't feel like a nerd. I feel like a nerd and I use, and I don't care if I'm a nerd. I feel like a nerd and I use, and you're a goddamn nerd. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Drugs changes my perception of reality. Mary in my home group tells me she's a badass addict, a delicate little dudette. She says when she uses, she feels wittier, prettier and tittier. I know exactly what she means. That's what happens to the addict. And it doesn't do that for the normal people. And sooner or later, it stops doing that for us as well. And we can't just quit it because we want to, because we're addicted to it because of the allergy of the body. I got an obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. The obsession of the mind takes away my ability to say no, so that I have to say yes, so that when I do say yes, I think I chose to or wanted to, but didn't. It was the disease making me do what I already didn't want to do. So if you think you can not do this just because you don't want to, you're fucked. Anybody know what fucked means? F-U-C-K-E-D. Feeling useless because I'm kicking every drug. Fucked. Who remembers fucked? Yeah, no shit. And the rest of you lying mothers, I know. You know. And that's what happens when the addict finally reaches a stage where drugs ain't doing it for him anymore. And on January the 15th, 1983, that's what happened to me. And I don't know what you brought here to recovery, but what I brought was a lot of hurt and hate. Hurt and hate. That's what I brought here. Hurt and hate. I hurt and I hate everything, everybody. I can't stand women. I hate women. I hate homos and queers and anybody different. I hate black people, totally racist and prejudiced. I'm from London, England, living in Los Angeles, and I hate foreigners. I can't stand you, or hate me, get away from me. And with all that turmoil and torment going on, I got to try to present to you a picture of somebody you will like. And drugs ain't making it okay anymore. Drugs ain't taking away the hurt and the hate anymore. And I hurt so bad. And I don't know what's wrong with me. And I don't know what to do about it. And in desperation and despair, without knowing what I was saying or without knowing who I was saying it to, and certainly not knowing what the results of what I was saying was going to be, I can remember in desperation going, help me, please help me, what is wrong with me? I can't stand it anymore. And asked for help. I don't know who I'm talking to, I don't know who I'm asking, I don't know what I'm asking for, I have no idea what the results of what I'm asking are going to be. But in desperation and despair, I reach a stage where I'm absolutely, totally powerless and I have to reach out for something else other than what I've already got for some help. ASK, Ask Saving Kit, Help, H-E-L-P, His Ever-Loving Presence. And you know what? Though years ago I'd abandoned him, he hadn't abandoned me. And when I asked for help, he seemed to be looking over my shoulder and he seemed to say to me, Mick, you silly fucker, I've been waiting for you to ask. Now get yourself over that 12-step program. Sent me to you. I asked for help and he sent me to you. That's why I know God and the power are different. God and the power are different. Don't confuse God and this power that we have here. If you've got a God in your life, thank it for this power, but don't confuse it. Five. Thought you were getting fat rugging round here. See, we have a power, right? I don't know. We know why we walk around NA. You know, claiming we're powerless. Everybody seems to. It seems to be the common factor. I don't. My troops don't. Because I teach them what they're not powerless. See, people seem to talk around about powerless, powerless, powerless. Everybody's powerless, powerless over people, placing things. Powerless, powerless, powerless. Poor little powerless. I'm so powerless. You know. Why do we do that in NA? Why do we do that? To me, that sounds like the disease getting me to deny the power that's in my life. Why would I do that? In and of myself, I was helpless, hopeless, and powerless, destitute in every department. How come? How come I was helpless and hopeless? How come I had no God in my life? Because being an addict, years before I knew it, the disease I got that I'm powerless over, when I start using, in my case it was at 16, when I start using, the disease I got gets me to abandon God and spirituality, to turn my back away from all the religion. I was raised in a religion, from the spirituality and the religious knowledge that I know. The disease I got gets me to start using drugs so that it can become the power in my life. So that as I continue to use along the path of life, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, the disease I got that I'm powerless over gets me to abandon God and spirituality so that it can become the power in my life, dictating and dominating everything I say, do, think and feel. Anybody know what I'm talking about here? And it makes me do what I already don't want to do. So I can't rely on the fact that I don't want to do it. I gotta not want to do it, but I can't rely on the fact that I don't want to do it. I gotta not want to do it, then do these steps and this work so that I don't do what I already don't want to do. And if I ain't doing these steps and this work, or ain't done these steps and this work, I will do what I don't want to do, because the disease I got that I'm powerless over will make me do what I don't want to do. You think I knew that shit when I got here? Never had a clue. Never had a clue. Nothing. I had to learn that here. I don't know I'm powerless, how would I know? We think I can work it out for myself. What does powerless mean? Powerless ain't what I do because I'm powerless. Powerless means godless. That's what powerless means. I have absence of the power. Powerless equals no power. God equals power, therefore powerless equals no God. See? That's why this power here, if you be an addict, works for everybody, whether you're atheist or agnostic. We don't care. Nobody cares. Nobody cares what your preference is along these lines. We don't care whether you're Catholic or Jewish or Hindu or Muslim. We don't care what you are. You can have any kind of power that works for you. You can have any denomination of God. You can have any determination of God. Whatever works for you, a power greater than yourself that is God of your understanding is fine with us. Nobody gives a shit what you believe in as long as you get something. Because at 2 o'clock in the morning when them demons are screaming and you've got to use so bad and your guts are being ripped out by this disease and you got to do something, you better have more going for you than the fact that you don't want to do it. And you better have something that makes sense to you that you can rely upon to not have to fucking do it, so that this disease ain't got you by the short ones, man, and wails you in like a goddamn fish. See? So, and why we don't care what you believe in and what your concept of God may be, is because we've learnt around here that all the gods, no matter what kind of God you got, all have at least one thing in common with all the other gods. All the gods, every god, everybody, if we got 100 addicts in here and we got 100 different gods, they've all got at least one thing in common. You know what that is? All the gods send their addicts here, don't they? That's good shit, isn't it? Because here's the power that they provided for an addict to not have to use. So we don't care where you believe this power come from. You can decide for yourself. No one gives a shit. But you can't deny the power, because we're going to circle up and we're going to, like, thank it. And it's going to work for us. And we're all looking at living proof that it worked for 23 years. You're looking at living proof that you ain't the sickest fuck in this room. You're looking at living proof that they let anyone in NA. So we got some things that we can rely on. I'm getting the message from you. I hear your laughter. I love the laughter, the language of the heart, H-E-A-R-T, healing, enjoying and recovering together. That's what we do, don't we? We come here to do together what we couldn't do apart. You go down there to Trafalgar and tell them, oh, I just come from the NA meeting. They go, oh, poor soul. They don't fucking understand. Well, they don't give a shit. They're too busy. No, but we do, don't we? We come along, don't we? And the language of the heart, the laughter that we share, one addict relating to another addict. See? And that tells me, that gives me the message. Because they say, if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sick fuck like me, there ain't no doubt about you, pal, I'll tell you that. Because I don't get through to no well people. Well people don't laugh at my shit. You know? See? And I just want to tell you something. You know, in Narcotics Anonymous, the Peter principle applies. If you know what that is. 90% of the work in Narcotics Anonymous is done by less than 10% of the people. Less than 10% of the people do 90% of the work in Narcotics Anonymous. And it's not a coincidence, you know, that less than 10% of us stay clean over the long haul. We got 100 addicts in here tonight. Was there three of us with over 20 years? Time don't count. Don't it? Stick around and do it. You're invited to stick around. The very first thing I heard was, keep coming back. I said, what for? He said, we love you. I went, wow. It was in West Hollywood, and West Hollywood's a bit of a funny place. When dudes tell you they love you in West Hollywood, you go, I bet you fucking do, you know. But that was the message that I got when I first got here. And I got a hearing problem. I don't hear shit right. Used to drive my mum nuts. My mum didn't understand a fucking thing about me. I would come home ripped. Mum would be in her bed, she would hear me, she would yell out down the stairs, ripped again, son! I'd say, so am I, Mum. You know, she didn't understand, you know. But we do, don't we? That's why we come here. And what I was going to say was, I'm not physically very well right now. I'm physically hurting quite a bit. I got stomach hernias and they're getting blocked up, and I just come out of the emergency room in Santa Monica last week. Come here. I shouldn't have actually come here, as a matter of fact, but you know, Gary and Sam's wedding is very important to me, and I got another convention to do in Spain towards the end of the month, and you know, I wanted to not put it off. Coming here today, I was, you know, exhausted, jet lagged, and Carol and Kieran come round and pick me up in Potter's Bar. I could have quite easily have cried off. I was instigational in getting this meeting started. But I could have, like, called up the troops and they loved me whether I showed up here or not tonight. I could have cried off and not come up here and shown up. Nobody would have, like, bad-mouthed me or think any of the worse for me. I'm physically not well, you know. So I could have, like, legitimately. But I didn't get 23 years clean not showing up. See? You guys taught me well. You taught me this is a priority in my life. You told me this is my primary purpose. Stay clean, carry the message. That's what I do. I don't let some uncomfortable fucking feeling, you know, put me off, you know. I don't let that happen. You guys have taught me well. And I'm going to keep coming back. I'm no longer powerless over my addiction. I got so much goddamn power over my addiction as long as I stay here with you, doing what we do here. In and of myself, I was helpless, hopeless, and powerless, but I ain't in and of myself anymore. And I ain't going to drift off and wander off from you so that I revert back to being self. I'm staying here with you. Here's the power. I turned back to the God I'd abandoned and asked for help. It sent me to you. Here was a 12-step spiritual fellowship. You guys had a program, a 12 steps program in a book with a sponsor. My sponsor's story is in the book. You know, page 157, if you're interested. You know, and I got sponsor. I got sponsorees. I got so much bloody power over my addiction as long as I stay here with you doing what we do. If I see every single day folk drift off, usually with good reasons. And you know what? We bury them. That's why I tell folk, don't get well on me. Don't fucking get well on me. We keep burying them well ones. They get well, we have to bury the bastards. You know? So I don't get that. I'm staying here with you. I ain't going nowhere. I'm staying right here with you, where I belong, where I've bloomed, where I've blossomed, where I love to be. I ain't broke, busted, disgusted and not to be trusted today. I'm a very happening dude, as a matter of fact. I'm a very wealthy man financially and materially. You know, I'm an active member of the community. And guess what? We read it out here tonight. The only requirement for membership is a desire to quit. It's not what makes you a member. You can have a desire to quit and be no more a member of Narcotics Anonymous than the man in the moon. In Beverly Hills, there's an exclusive club there. I know I have all the requirements for membership. You know, I'm a successful local businessman, property owner. I sponsor members of the Beverly Hills Golf Club. What would you think would happen if I went down with my golf clubs and went to the first tee and started teeing off at the Beverly Hills Golf Club? That steward would be over on me like white on rice, mate. They would be over on me and they would say, excuse me, sir, are you a member? Can I turn around to him and say, no, but I've got all the requirements for membership. Excuse me, sir, you're not allowed to play. You can have the requirement for membership. And I never brought that here with me. I never came in here with any desire to quit. I never brought that with me. We don't turn our back on anybody, but we do try and pass on what's absolutely essential to get involved in Narcotics Anonymous. Become an active member. Start contributing to the greater good of the whole. I think the biggest thing I've ever done in my entire life is become a small part of this great whole. And I thank you for that. And I thank you for having me. Thank you. Thank you.